You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm joined today with my good friend, Jamie Bush, owner of Unique Boutique Iowa. And if I got that right, Rodeo Mom. And I mean, you gave like a few things. Can you kind of dive into some of those?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Jamie Bush. I am a rodeo wife, a mom of three, a boutique owner, a softball coach, and I work full time as well for a nonprofit.
Tell me about Rodeo Wife, if you don't mind. I had a gentleman on that was a rodeo man. I couldn't even quite tell you. He went in on the horses, cowboy, I guess, rodeo cowboy, or what's the term for that when you ride in on the unbridled horses?
Roughstock rider, probably.
Oh, sure, I think so. That sounds right. He had his whole thing was raise high and lift. Anyway, sorry. Keep
yeah,
going.
Yep. Probably a bareback rider.
Yeah.
Could have been saddle bronc too. So,
yeah.
So I married into a rodeo family. My husband is Joe Bush. He's in the pro rodeo. He's a calf roper and a steer wrestler. Yeah. I mean, when we were dating, so we've been together 13 years. It'll be 13 in October. When we first met, he was hitting the rodeo trail pretty hard in his late 20s. And he had been rodeoing pretty much his whole life and went to the Great Lakes Circuit Finals. Which there's circuits that you go into and out of. And so to make it to that is a good thing. It's a good chance to go to the National Finals Rodeo, which is always in December in Vegas. But yep, our dating life was me trying to catch him at a rodeo. and then we started having kiddos, so he slowed down a little bit. And then this last year, he picked back up quite a bit, made it to, I don't know, probably just under 20 rodeos. About a little over a month ago, we were up in Spooner, Wisconsin, and he took a horn to the rib cage and broke a rib. So he's out at least for 30 days. He took a 30-day release. So he might be back for River City Roundup, which is used to be the last rodeo of the season in Exarban, which is not really Exarban anymore in Omaha, but he might be back for that. He's talking about it, so we'll see. But it's a crazy world. It's a big, small family, and I married into it.
That's exciting. Rodeo, I feel like, is one of those things where it's like you either get it or you don't. You're either in or you're not. Like if that so, you know, for me, I just never really grew up the rodeo, haven't really been. I feel like I'm kind of one of those. But one of our clients, they're pretty heavily, pretty much the whole family in the rodeo. And so we get, you know, I mean, and they could not be more proud of, you know, their kids are getting older now and they're same sort of thing. They're roping steers and wild hogs and stuff like that. And it seems like it would definitely be an absolute blast. I just haven't quite. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting thing. Maybe kind of is clicky the right word? I'm thinking more like a close-knit network. That's really what I'm more after.
Yeah, I would say my husband would tell you, and some barrel racers might scold me for this, but my husband would tell you that the barrel racing world is a very different world. There's futurities and lots of different things involved in that. So he would say that was clicky and doesn't want our kids to be any part of that. But I was like, well, what about the rodeo queen world? I was like, which one's worse? So you got to pick. We have three girls, so we're bound for one or the other. My husband had six. There were six total in his family, and his little sisters. Well, his older sister and his little sisters were pretty heavy into breakaway, which is now starting to be sanctioned for the women's pro rodeo, which is really nice. It had only been in amateur rodeos prior, so it's slowly getting its hype And so I think we're probably going that way with our kids. But at the end of the day, it's all very expensive. You know, those guys, they might have some nice sponsors and stuff, but you have to have money to keep going down the road. Between fuel and horses and, you know, your entry fees. And if you have to draw out, you get, you know, penalty fees and just all different things. So, but I wouldn't call, I haven't experienced the clicky part of that. I'm sure it could be there maybe farther down south. But it is a very, it's a very big, small world, and it's a good everything to be around. You know, Joe currently doesn't have a bulldog and horse, a steer wrestling horse. And so we'll ride up to the rodeos and he'll ask buddies if he can ride their horse. And like, these are performance horses. They're $20,000-$50,000 horses. And most steer wrestlers are like, sure, you can, you know, sure, I'll mount you, like, not a problem. Now if Joe wins, they get a portion of that, which is nice, you know? And sometimes he'll just say, hey, here's, you know, $100 cause you know, he got to ride someone's horse. So we have a couple of young horses. We have some old horses and we have some young horses. So, that he's working with to try to get back on that to have our own. But I'll also say it's a little bit nice to not have to take the truck and trailer up, and just be able to get to a rodeo, because trying to get three kids and my husband and everything at home ready and then make it to a rodeo in time sometimes is a little difficult. So, but yeah, it's a big village and, Everybody helps everybody. Everybody helps everybody's kids. Even in high school rodeo, it's kind of the same. Everybody's helping everybody to get down the road in whatever way they can. And I don't think I've experienced a lot of that as a kid. So that was something really different and really neat.
It was really cool. I had the pleasure of interviewing Zach Aaron. Did horseback riding for the rodeo, and he had a whole saying, raise high and lift, and it's kind of like been a guiding principle for him from the rodeo that he's taken into business and finally business executive coaching. It's really interesting for sure. I'm sure you get to learn plenty of things. That saying has been, he says it a few times, so it's easy to get stuck with you, but also like, it does seem very relevant. And the way he describes it, I've never been bareback, you know, wild horse riding, but the way he describes it is, you know, your natural instinct is to lean against where the horse is bucking. Mm-hmm. But in reality, you almost kind of want to just loosen up and go with the movements, mm-hmm, more than anything else. Which, how applicable is that to life? That's just a wild notion to me in general.
Right. Right. All those cowboys, they teach us more than you would think.
For sure. So, okay, let's kind of rewind back to your... Well, first, what are you doing right now with Unique Boutique? Kind of tell me about that. And then you and I had an interesting sort of interaction as well where we first got connected.
Sure.
And so if you wanted to just talk a little bit about that so we can understand what you're doing currently in general with the community, and then we'll kind of do a rewind back to sort of the high school period and where you started.
All the things. Yep. So I own the Unique Boutique. It is in Neola, Iowa. So Southwest Iowa, just a little bit out of Council Bluffs, or Omaha, Nebraska. A lot of your followers are probably Kansas City and things. So a couple hours, 3 hours from you guys. But I started, my mom would tell you that I sold rocks as a kid, so I've always sold things, and that it's just kind of the entrepreneurial spirit that I've had. So that's always been kind of the beginning of my story. I've always sold things. My neighbor and I would polish rocks. We lived on a busy street, and we would go up and down the street and sell rocks and come home with money every single day. We couldn't cross the street. So, but I moved out here with my husband when we got married, and I didn't know anyone. I was about 45 minutes to an hour from home. We were having babies and I was staying home, and it was really difficult to get to know anyone. My husband was homeschooled up until high school and a pretty quiet kid from what I hear in high school. When he bought his house prior to him and I together, he was not really ever home because he was rodeoing and working. And so there weren't a lot of people that I could just like reach out to and like meet because I had just moved out here and just had a baby. You're kind of stuck at home a little bit, you know. And I was driving back home quite a bit, and at the time we were a one-income household, and so it's kind of one of those things like, I can't do this every day, you know? And so I started selling headbands, little girls' headbands. So I had my oldest daughter before I was with my husband, Addie, and I started making headbands and like applique onesies and some other things. And so I started selling those things, and I got into a lot of the vendor events, craft fairs and things like that out here where we live. And that was kind of my nonchalant way of meeting people. It wasn't on purpose. It was just the person that I am, kind of longing for some adult and other interaction. My husband was working 60-hour weeks. He's a truck driver. He's home every day or every night, but I would never know when. So
right.
Started selling that. That kind of turned into, I've always sold something, like I said. So when I was 18, I started selling Mary Kay, like a lot of the MLMs and different things like that. And then I got into LuLaRoe, which is like
okay.
A whole nother podcast, Sam. But
yeah.
Yeah. I got into
Let's take a second on the LuLaRoes. I feel like there's probably some fans out there. So tell me about that. And can you tell me about your experience in general? Because you mentioned a couple, Mary Kay, LuLaRoe. Yeah. I'm just more kind of curious because I feel like, you know, there's some people that definitely seem to succeed in it. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people that definitely sort of like, you know, I don't know, wash out or just don't have interest.
Yeah.
Maybe they buy in and then it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, the sales component is difficult, I think. Not everybody's
Not everybody has it.
Ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was 18, I started selling Mary Kay. It was okay. I mean, I had a few people. I was never that person in Walmart that was mm-hmm. like, excuse me, do you know you have the most beautiful green eyes ever? You should come to my Mary Kay party. Like, I was never that person. I never did that, but I can't tell you.
You did that impression really well. I started just ebbing away slowly just in that impression.
I cannot tell you how many times that has happened to me. Like, I worked at a Scooters and then the drive-through, they would come up, you know, oh my gosh, you have the most beautiful eyes. Did you think about Mary Kay or Arbonne or all the things were? So, I just did Mary Kay. I met a woman, and I honestly can't remember where I met her. I sold a little bit in college. And so some people purchased, some people didn't. I used it. And then that kind of turned into several other things throughout the years. My 31 was a really big one, which they just shut their doors down like about in the last year. But it was a faith-based bag company. That I did that on and off for a lot of years. Extra money, you know. After I had Addie, I started selling Unique.
I think we have one of those bags. Those were like the heavy duty, sort of kind of like cutesy. Mm-hmm. They managed to get the middle of like cutesy, but also heavy duty. Like you could, and then some of them we have this big industrial tote that says SAP established. And then the year we were married.
That.
Yeah, that's totally it. That's the one.
Yep.
That was.
So, yeah. Did that on and off. And I mean, I found out later in life from an uncle of mine that who also has several businesses in Lincoln, Nebraska, that I guess my great grandpa, like used to go to Mexico and like bring all this stuff back and would sell stuff out of a van. And he's like, got that from our ancestors. He's like,
it's like in our blood.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of laugh about that. But, and then I had Addie and I was selling Unique makeup, which started out with like these false lash, mascara and all this stuff. I sold that for a really long time. Kind of one of those things where like you could have some on hand or people needed, you know, $20 mascara. They could just ordered it. And then got into the like making things when I had Addie. And then married my husband, had Evelyn, our kiddo, second kiddo, his first, our second. And LuLaRoe was getting really big. And I was like, you know, I think I could do this. Like, how do you feel about this? We were a one income household.
How have you handled rejection during all this? I'm sorry. I feel like I need to take a momentary pause, right? Because the sales for you're doing this early on, right? So is this just something where you've always just kind of grown up with rejection? You're used to it, doesn't hit the same way? Or do you still have those moments where there's a self-doubt, like, man, that person was a real jerk. Is my product that bad? You know, I don't think I have a product. Everybody else seems to love it, but that person got to me.
Yeah. I would say in my younger days, I didn't care. And I was taught kind of, I did have good people that had been, you know, in sales, always older than me, by, you know, probably 20 plus years, that were like, no is just no right now. You know, try again later. Like, it's just no right now, which, I mean, I'm in sales now and it's still, I've held true to that. Like, no is just no right now. But I'm also, and will never be the nagging person. Like, you have to take those social cues, like, you know, I would like to think that I'm good at that. I don't know what other people would tell you, but I think most of the time, like, you kind of get the point. I'm a pretty decent reader of people. You know, the no right now, not right now is, you know, might not. You kind of get that vibe, like, it's never going to be a yes. That's just not in their realm of things, you know.
Right.
Never had really big teams of things. I did sell Body by Vi when I was pregnant with Addie, and I got a decent team with that. But it was never like, let's use this social so we can have this and build a team and get your parents to do it and get this. And like, I never did any of that. That was like,
gotcha.
You're doing too much. And that's what a lot of those companies do, or people within those companies do. So, but rejection, as a younger person, I would say that I don't think it bothered me. In my last few years, I think just life has caught up to me, not in a bad way. It just my age and my job and my kids and like all the things. So sometimes I double think kind of like, what did I do? Did I do something like, or I overthink things, which my husband is very, very good at reading me and my actions and reactions to things, and kind of can catch that sometimes even before I can. And he's like, hey, let's have a chat, you know, like, you're not doing anything wrong, you know. So I'm really thankful for that he can kind of see that. So hopefully that answers.
No, it does really well. And it hits to something that's relatable to me. And it's something that I was literally just kind of thinking about the other day in a very similar sort of way. In my younger years, I think it was just, I was so full of myself for me that like when, you know, rejection was like, all right, that's fine. You know, I don't have time to waste on, I'm just going to go to the next and the next and the next till I get what it is I want, whatever it was I was after. And then, you know, sort of a similar sort of thing with age and, you know, I been married for a while and have a kid and, you know, I think somewhere in there you start to realize that it's like, well, planet Earth is a little bit bigger than just me, thank God.
Right.
And so now it's, I mean, on one hand, it's a good thing, right? You become more empathetic. On the other hand, yeah, same sort of thing with me. Every now and again, maybe a bad sale or something like that. And it's gotten easier lately, just more reps. But, you know, there was a time there in the middle, for sure, where it was like, what did I do? Everything lined up. Everything was perfect.
And then
they said they wanted it, and I was offering what they wanted. And then somewhere it just didn't pan out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you start to take that home like, ah, I mean, maybe I should have done this better. Or I could have said that. Or I obviously, and I hold the opinion too that sales is presenting value, right? If you present value accurately and it is value that the other person wants, then there's a sale done. If you haven't, if you lose the sale, it's not because you weren't, you didn't say the right words, you weren't, the long and the short of it is you didn't accurately present value.
Right.
And so that becomes particularly difficult, right? When what you think you have is valuable and you think it would benefit the other person.
Right. Right. Yep. I think you're like spot on with that. And in sales, some people just get thrown into things. Do they even know that? Are they even teaching that? Right. How many, there's a lot of young people that you're like, they're like, well, I'm in sales. Well, what are you selling? You know, why sell makeup? Okay. What are you trying to sell me? What do I need? What do I think I need? What do you think I need? You know, like what can I not live without? You know what I mean? So, and then they're just looking at you like, well, I just sell makeup. Okay. So when kiddos come into my shop, I live in a small town. We have 900 people. A lot of times the small businesses, they come in and these kids, they're selling driveway signs for post prom, or they need a basket for post prom, or football, or, you know, softball, whatever the things are. And so a lot of times the parents are reaching out, which is fine. They have their little committees and things, but I'm like, I would like your kiddo to come ask me, here's where I will be. And then I need a flyer. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a thank you, but it needs to be something back that I gave you this value. It was a value of this and it was given. And then I can track it myself, but also teaching these kids, like, your parents can't ask for everything. You have to ask. And so, which contradicts a little bit of, I just put a Facebook post out yesterday for my daughter that plays select softball for raffle tickets. Hey, this is what she's doing. Da, da, da. A lot of people follow Addie and what she's doing. She's a good ball player. But I make Addie write thank yous to every single one of those people. We sold 100 raffle tickets last year. She wrote 100 thank yous, probably less than that because some people bought books, but she wrote thank yous to everybody. It's very important to me. So I went a little off there, but that's my thought on that.
No, I think it's, thank you. I think it's relevant and significant. I think we got to something there because it, you know, and I think, you know, it's under the guise of sales, but also everything is sales. I don't think people realize, you know, when you went to an interview and you didn't get a full-time job for whatever, it comes back to that same premise. You didn't accurately present value.
Right.
So when you go into an interview, right? It's if you don't get the job, it's because, I mean, you know, it's not a good fit, obviously, but then also the fact that you made it to the interview indicates from the application, right? There's a theory that there might be value there. And if you didn't make it past the interview, there's a decent argument that in the same sort of way, you failed to present value, or there wasn't value there in the first place is another possibility, in which case that's obviously fine. If you get in and it's like, we thought you were a mechanical engineer and it turns out you're a salesperson, right? There's no value there anyway. So both parties can, like, obviously confused. There's no value. I'm not, you know, it's not even worth presenting value. But if it's like, we think it's a fit and I think it's a fit and I present value, or I thought I did, and then I still don't get the job. You know, it's that same sort of thing. And so rejection, I think, kind of plagues everybody, really. So point is there, it's a probably a lesson for all of us.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So into LuLaRoe. I think I cut you off just as you were about to get to the apex. Sorry about that.
No,
so then that leads into LuLaRoe.
Yeah, so I don't want to say I begged my husband, because my husband knows when I make a decision, like, I'm going to figure it out one way or another. But before I got married to my husband, I filed bankruptcy. And yeah, it was actually, I mean, looking back on it now. So my oldest daughter is not my husband's. I was not married previously. But as we got into custody battle and things, I got very worried. I was young and dumb, but very worried. And I had a little bit of debt, not a lot. I mean, it was like $25,000. Not to me, not enough to file bankruptcy, but the bankruptcy lawyers aren't going to tell you that, right? And most of that was a vehicle. And so I filed, and I couldn't even tell you now, 11, 13, 11, whichever one you pay back, I filed that. And so I, when I married Joe, we paid the rest
of my- I think that's seven. So I think 11 is business.
Did you-
I feel like 11 is business. 13.
I should know
13,
that. 13.
13
years.
No, no, no. I think 13 is the one you pay off over time. And seven is the one that okay. They liquidate.
Everything.
And then
yeah, yeah.
You, sorry, this is all semi-fresh because I've lost track. Six plus something years ago now, I definitely looked at the papers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, keep going. So 13, yeah, I think,
we got married and I didn't have I think I had like a year left. And so mm-hmm. we paid it off when we got married, but then I couldn't get any credit cards. We couldn't put a name on the house. He bought a car for me. Like we were married, but you know, had to get I needed a bigger vehicle. We were pregnant and hadn't, you know, all the things.
And that checkbox is on every form.
Yeah.
Have you ever declared bankruptcy? Right. It's right. Like,
and so we worked through it. It was okay. But when it came to like having a credit card, I was actually fearful. And again, I had two credit cards in that bankruptcy that were like $2,200 each. Like it wasn't it was coming out of college. It was having a baby. It was, you know, all the things and a vehicle. And again, looking back on it now, like my parents would have helped a little more. You know, I was just trying to be a big girl. So,
well, some of those creditors get so intimidating.
Yeah.
In a phone call, depending on the one you get in the, you know, I mean, it's in the day
where
pretty intimidating.
Where I was worried was I had a lawyer for a custody battle. And I had to pay her because, you know, and it was a lot of money for the moment, but she took pity on me and was not charging me nearly what she would have charged. And she was a bulldog. So I was lucky. It was a little hard with certain things. And I was, like I said, fearful of having a credit card. So when I brought this, I want to do this to my husband, you had to buy it in packages. And what LuLaRoe, for those of you that don't know, started out the legging craze, the crazy different leggings, the unicorns that people wanted. And it started that and they had t-shirts and dresses and sweaters and all these things later on. But it was the leggings that started it. And so you had to purchase a package. You were put on a wait list. You had to call. You had to fill everything out. You were put on a wait list. And then when you got that call, you had to be ready to buy your package. And that was $5,000. And so I got this credit card in my husband's name and, you know, told him I wanted to do this. And he's my husband's always the, you know, the thinker. How many people are doing it in the area? You know, is there anybody close to us? Like, what's the return on this? Like, my husband is the numbers in his head person, where I'm the numbers on paper person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's a lot
quicker. The opportunity cost, sort of like he's thinking those ways. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep. So, we decided we were going to do it. Mm-hmm. And literally, it was like November 5th of 2016. I got the call. Paid for it, got on Facebook, and a girl in Underwood, which is like 6 miles from us, had just launched her LuLaRoe business. And I was like, shit. I didn't even know, like, I can't even tell my husband, you can't go back. Like, I couldn't go back and say, I don't want to do this. Like, I was like, I'll make it work. It'll work. We get different things. Like, the thing with
right.
Rodeo was when you purchased it, you could purchase this style of shirt, but you could not purchase what it looked like. It would just be this cut and have, maybe it was pink. Maybe it had the Statue of Liberty on it. Maybe it had suns on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It
All right. Interesting.
Prints. Like you had.
Right, right, right.
Prints. And that's why they said, like, did you get the unicorns? Which, like, black leggings were the unicorns. Everybody wanted black leggings then. Right. And so when you purchase this package, you get so many things, so many pairs of leggings and sizes and all the different things.
So when you say unicorn, you're not being literal. You're being like, hey, I happen to get the 1% of the shippings that went out for the, and I don't get to pick the color, so I won the lottery here. This is about to go fast.
Instead of people paying $30 for a pair of leggings, they were paying $75 for a pair of leggings because they were nice leggings. I'll give them that at the beginning.
Right. But it was the one you couldn't get. It was the color that nobody had. Okay. Correct.
And this was also in the very crazy craze of the beginning of online Facebook live selling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, day in and day out, you could get on Facebook Lives and all these women were selling LuLaRoe. And so I did that.
I remember that phase because there was some of those oysters or whatever and pearls too. I don't, you might know what I'm talking about. Yep. I don't know, but they'd open them up live and people
and
would pre-purchase them.
And a lot of the women would do both. They would do both. Like, you bought this. So now you get this too for $10 or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a big live thing. So I did that for about 2 years, I would say hardcore, about a little over a year. But the thing is, and it's even in my business now, like, to make money, you have to keep purchasing, you know?
Yeah.
And so I had to keep doing that. And, it finally kind of got to the point where there was so much going on with LuLaRoe. Like, you can go on, I think it's on Prime, and look up Lula Riches and watch the whole, like, segment, whatever, of all the things that happened with LuLaRoe. But I found that leggings and t-shirts were just, and cardigans were just a thing at that point. So I kind of got out of that and was trying to do the research on how I could do this on my own. But with that, I was in debt, not a lot, enough that it was like $3,000, but enough that I felt terrible because my husband was working 60 plus hour work weeks and I was home with the kids and I had no income. So it, you know, and he was paying this credit card off and I felt terrible. And never once did he express that he was upset. I'm thankful for that. It was what it was. We took a chance. We did it. And I failed, which I'm totally fine saying. But I also, in any business and things that I've done since, have said, like, I will not be in debt. I will not take out loans. I will not, like. And so within a short time frame, we had kiddos 2 years apart. Evelyn was born in 16, in June of 16, and Penny was born May of 18. So in that 2 years, I secretly started selling Color Street nail strips because it was like $100 to join them. And a lot of LuLaRoe people were jumping ship and going into this Color Street. And I think I used birthday money my dad gave me to, like, buy into this business. And it wasn't, like, super secretly. Like, eventually my husband figured it out because I was, you know, the nails and all the things. But all of the money that I made from that sat in the Color Street account. I never transferred it out. And so when I was, like, I think it was, like, $2,700 I had sitting in there. And when I had Penny, I had met this woman from Connecticut who sold the LuLaRoe, sold Color Street. I was on her team for Color Street. And like, we just meshed and started chatting a whole bunch. And I figured out how to buy, well, J. Elizabeth was another MLM thing, but that's when like t-shirts started getting really big, like graphic t-shirts. And you could buy, it was a company, but you could post these shirts and sell them. And so I started doing that because t-shirts were the thing. And then I figured out how to get a wholesale, like purchase wholesale things. And so I started slowly doing that. And I was telling this girl, like, you should do this. Like, you'd be great at it. You should do it. And we started doing it together. And it got to the point that...
I'm thinking of Woot shirts, by the way, for some reason. Is this around the Woot shirt craze? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
There was, like, this website you could go to, and it had a new shirt every week. It was called Woot.
Yeah,
and...
similar. Very similar.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, it's okay. And then we started buying like packs. When you buy wholesale, you buy packs of things. So it might be like two smalls, two mediums, two larges, or one small, two mediums, two larges, and an extra large. And so you buy packs. Usually they're in sixes. And so we were using Google Sheets, and like she had stuff and I had stuff, and we were posting stuff online, and we would ship stuff for each other. And like, that's what we were doing. And I had used that $2,700 that I had saved up to start doing that. And COVID hit. And well, let me backtrack. Then I said, I've always sold a little bit of everything. Tupperware hit, like I started selling Tupperware. And I can honestly tell you, it was just to furnish my home with all the Tupperware things, because I love Tupperware. I'm an old soul. My grandma used it for years. I still have some of her pieces. So I started selling Tupperware and Color Street. And I was still selling unique makeup. And so I was like, okay, I do all these things, and I had all these different Facebook pages. And so finally I came on to my LuLaRoe Facebook page, and I was like, here it is. It's all in one space. What are we going to call it? And 31 was still in there too. So I put a poll out, and they decided Unique Boutique Iowa. And so that's kind of how Unique Boutique Iowa started. Out of my home and someone else's home across the country, who I've still to this day never met in person. A lot of trust in someone that you don't know. But then I was doing open houses and stuff out of my house. We live in the country.
So the two of you are still working together?
Yeah.
After the t-shirts and the...
No. So about in the last year... So she sold her business. So basically, it'll all make sense in the end. So,
But it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, it's a rare relationship, right? That you're like updating spreadsheets, they're posting, you're posting, and you're both benefiting and profiting. And I'm guessing there was some enjoyment between the, that too, right? Friendship.
Yep. It was great. And, you know, she had kids and a husband. I have, you know, kids and a husband, and like
just
living through life and figuring it out. And she's a little bit older than me. So a lot of wisdom, you know, and different things.
Yeah.
And, so then I was going to, I kind of got to the point that I like, we don't have a really big house, and I had stuff everywhere. And I was like, I got to find something. And the building that I'm in now was owned by someone previously. And I was reaching out to this person to potentially rent a space. And at the time, it wasn't even to have like an open, like how you can walk through my boutique. It wasn't even that. It was, I just need a place to put all this stuff, because I was shipping stuff all over the United States. And
storage space.
Pretty much. Yeah. And I was looking everywhere in our town of five streets for anything, and just couldn't find anything. So I was going to rent that with him. COVID hit. And I was kind of, we were all fearful. And I told my husband, like, I should probably just stop this because I don't, we just didn't know. There were so many unknowns, right? And, but it really kicked off because everybody was home. Everybody was getting the funds. Everybody was, all you could do is sit at home, right? And so our out was getting online. And so I boomed even more. And the building that I was going to rent, he sold the building. And I was like devastated because I'm like, what am I going to do? So I found this old 1988 New Trend trailer, New Trend work trailer from Rasmussen out in way out in Omaha. And I think it was like, I don't know how much it was, $2,500. I can't remember. And I told my husband, I was like, we can turn this into a mobile boutique. Like, let's do it. We went out, looked at it, bought it, drove home. The like siding on it was like flapping in the wind while we're driving an hour and a half home. My cowboy husband puts Gorilla tape on it. And I'm like, at that point, I'm like rethinking, like, oh, God, what did we just do? Right. Came home and that week I ripped that thing to shreds. It had had some water damage, you know, all the things. It was old. I ripped the ceiling out, watertighted like all of it. My dad and some buddies came in and my brother-in-law and reran the electricity for the lights and stuff. Put like the RFD board up there, asked a friend that had, some old barn tin if I could buy some. I mean, it's really cool for what we did. We redid the floor. The only thing we didn't redo were the walls, which I painted. And then it had its debut. Like I would take it down onto Main Street in Eola on the weekends and put stuff outside and put stuff inside. And like, and that's what I did. And I did that for a few years. It was a blast. And it was during COVID where like nobody, you know, a lot of people weren't doing a lot. And so being able to just be set up on Main Street and people just stop. And, you know, I was always offered like, I'll wear a mask if you want, or I cannot be in here if you want to walk in, you know, all the things. And that it made its debut on Small Business Saturday, which is funny because that's kind of all of my spaces. So then that I kind of got to the point where I was backing back up into the house because I had a lot. But I would go out in that thing, put the heater on and sell live for hours. Then I bought a enclosed trailer. And stuff started going in there too. And my excuse was, well, I can drive this one because the big trailer was one axle. My husband's a truck driver. It's 8.5 feet wide. And I was like, I'm the epitome of flat tires. I will get a flat tire and it will be the end of all things. So I just won't drive this. So I did a lot of vendor. I started getting back into the vendor shows and things like that. And then I had the other enclosed trailer that I purchased. So I could take that places, or we could just roll racks in and out. Cause sometimes getting that, the bigger trailer is 8.5 by 16. And, a lot of work for my husband, which he never complained about, but it was just a lot of work for him. We couldn't just like roll up and be set. It wasn't like that. And so, then I was backing up into both trailers in the house. And so, I was trying to find a space, whatever I could do to find a space. And a woman that owns one of the lounge bars in Underwood, which is a town next to us, had this little space that I was told back in the day was a gas station. And it was just sitting. And so I had reached out from a friend of a friend. And again, this is still during COVID. And was like, this is what I want to do. This is where I'm at. And she's like, let's do it. And so we did it. We went in and just did what we could in this little space. This place didn't have a bathroom, it had electricity. That was it. But I could go to the bar right next door for the bathroom. but we made it work for 2.5 years. I opened that during COVID in November, Small Business Saturday was my first day. The week prior to opening, I had COVID for the first time. My husband had already had it, and I was off. And so we were working on this, doing the best we could. And my husband would, you need to go nap now. I didn't know if we were going to open a Small Business Saturday just because of that whole thing. And in the same year, same time, we found out that my oldest had some really significant food allergies. She had always kind of had tummy issues, and we had cut certain things out throughout for years. But during that same time, we found out she was allergic to corn, which is in everything.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole nother. We can talk about that too. But so then I opened that up. I was there for 2.5 years, and I was reached out to by the people that purchased the building that I was supposed to rent from the first time. And they were like, we have this space and, it's not going to be ready yet, but we knew you were looking, blah, blah, blah. We'll make it work. And that's the space that I'm in today. I've been here for about 2.5 years. So it's been trials, tribulations, all the things. Moving into Neola, it was great because I'm 3 minutes from home, which is what we wanted. I mean, Underwood was nice. It was there. But it still would take me 10 minutes, 15 minutes to get there to just stop if someone wanted to shop. So, but with coming to Neola came some pretty harsh times with another business that was here already and wasn't happy that I was here. And so things down to, I have some repurposed, you could barely see it, but I have some repurposed straight back furniture in here. And this person, here's one too.
Okay.
And this person had repurposed furniture in their place of business and was very upset that I had repurposed furniture. And at first, I had
interesting.
Really
and so for audio folks, I mean, you've posted, you've shown to a dresser and, a couple other things that, yeah. My guess would be you bought it off Craigslist or whatever and repainted it, sanded it and painted it, which is not only is it a great look, I think, for your shop, but also, fantastic. It fits into your thrifty nature that you're describing.
Yeah. So, I had really.
But there's a local. So you moved into town and you've got this boutique shop and there's a local business that you're describing that's maybe a little bit competitive or just has a sour nature.
I'm not from here. So doing business here and not being from here was already difficult. The people and them not knowing.
And they've got a scarcity mindset.
I truly don't know, if it was a insecurity thing or if it was, I don't know. I had tried to help this person with their business with multiple things. We were never best friends. I didn't know her that way, but I thought we were friends. I went into this person's shop all the time, took my kids in there. It got to the point where then I was apparently copying what this person was selling and it wasn't anything I'm just selling what's trending.
How did you find out they felt that way? Because it sounds like this wasn't apparent early on.
Yeah, there were some posts made. There were some things said. We did finally kind of have a conversation where it was just said that I was trying to take a little guy out. And I was I still live by this philosophy. I am a part of the Boutique Hub, which is a big conglomerate of boutiques and wholesalers. And their motto is community over competition. I firmly believe in that. And the things that we sold were completely separate. this was a drink shop and mine was a boutique for clothes. Mm. So and there was like gifty trinket items in that space. And like I have a little bit of everything. So I didn't think of it that way. I you know, it wasn't it just sure. wasn't in my anything.
And yeah, so, one on the radar.
Yeah. When that conversation was had, it was still just kind of left of like, I was like, well, I just don't agree with, you know, those thoughts and like, sorry, but I'm just going to keep moving on. And so after that, it was a year of crazy, lots of text message, lots of things. Yeah, it was a little crazy. So, but with that, that would have been the point where you had said, like, did you have that like notion of, were you doing the right thing? Do you keep going? And, the rejection part of like, oh my gosh, are people going to support me? And so I kept my head down. I just kept going. I've never posted anything. I won't. And anybody that's from the area knows, like, they know. And so I just kept going. And that person that started selling LuLaRoe the same time that I did, I had reached out to and was just kind of like guidance on everything, not just that, just everything. And they had also started a big boutique that's in Council Bluffs. And I just really look up to her. And so her and another person from the boutique hub were just like, keep your head down, keep doing your thing. People shop with you because they want to shop with you. They want your experience. And so that's, you know, kind of what I had in my head. And then my husband, of course, you know, a lot of those like, should I keep doing this? Should I just say screw it? Like, and my husband's like, we're just going to keep going. And so we have. And I'm still here. The people I rent from are great. And I'm only open on weekends. I have built this business on weekends. I do have online where we ship and things like that, but I've built it on weekends. So sometimes when things are going on at the school and definitely holidays, we have different hours because people are kind of all over. But otherwise, I've built it on weekends. And yeah, it's been pretty crazy. For the first time ever, just this last year, kind of because of not knowing with the tariffs and things like that, my husband and I took a little bit bigger chance. So I do have a little bit of debt, no loans or anything, but just kind of a little bit of debt on a credit card, which is fine. Like, we're good. You know, if we absolutely had to pay it off right this minute, we could. But we just did that not knowing kind of how it was going to go. I bought some extra things, some more, you know, because during COVID, when that stuff was happening, we couldn't get anything shipped. And so it was, you know, you got it or you didn't, you know, definitely.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I think short-term strategic debt is definitely different. We had to adopt a mentality during, it was like 2021. I don't know, I guess the return of COVID, if you will, but, we had to adopt a period where we started putting, and it's what's odd is it's still almost kind of stayed true in the electronic space. We put on our invoices now, it's like, hey, this is good right now. And if you don't accept the order, then there's a decent likelihood we're going to have to go and requote. And we might have to add a fee on top of it at that point, because, you know, we spend a lot of time finding the right hardware for this thing. And transparently, it's gone tomorrow. It's kind of wild.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it. And I think short-term strategic debt is definitely a much different thing, really. I want to talk to. I don't want to derail you.
No,
but there's a theme here that's also, I think, shared among entrepreneurs that would be fun to hit on as well. And I'm trying to think how to pose it as a question, but it's basically like what possesses you, because, you know, there's obviously moments of doubt you have in there, but the end story, you can kind of like, failure wasn't really an option. And that's a scrappy entrepreneurial thing. And I think sometimes people discount that. You know, you talked about COVID. Do I wear the mask? Do I not wear the mask? You walk through, do you not walk through? And I'll just go even further, you know, for me. we were shut down month one, but I had like just started my business. And so month two, I'm literally going door to door. And I had, there were so many people. I had a coach literally that thought I was insane. She told me too. She's like, you've got to figure out something else. And unfortunately, I just kind of didn't listen to her. On one hand, she wasn't wrong. On the other hand, I didn't have a better means for sales than what I knew, which was door to door. And I would put on the mask or not put on the mask based off of the general feel in the room. Because part of sales, right, is being as comfortable as you can. My preference was to have it off because, frankly, I think one of the few things I have going for me is my dashing good looks. But then if they had the mask on, it was, you know, pretty clear that, you know, you're not going to make a sale if you're going to cut. So it's like, put the mask on.
Well, and you can't and, signals either.
No, you can't read signals. No. Well, it's like, okay, look. To your point exactly, it had nothing to do with my dashing good looks. It had everything to do with the fact that I think a sale happens on trust. I mentioned value, but the other one is also trust.
If they don't, somebody dies.
Right, you can have all the value in the world, but if you don't have trust, and a smile says a lot.
But my green eyes would have sold everybody everything, apparently.
So how it's It's wild, right? Because you're plowing through everything, and why?
Yeah.
What possesses? I joke at this point and say it's just a demon. It's not. It's but it's the closest kind of comedic sort of like what possesses you? It's like I don't know, some sort of devil, because it's the like failure wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. But what's funny is we don't. And you, this is just me hearing you story and overlaying it maybe a little with mine, but also completely different. Like, frankly, you, all the different transitions you worked for through, I think are maybe even more so.
Sure.
And I'm over here, like the big picture, failure clearly wasn't an option.
Sure.
But in the independent moments, you clearly had doubts.
Sure. Absolutely. Which again, for my friends that are here, my family, you know, my parents, my dad's my biggest cheerleader next to my husband. I would like to say that it's just my personality, but as I've gotten into my adult years, I've learned that I have adult ADHD. And I think I wouldn't be able to, and I'm not medicated or anything. So people that I work with are going to be like, that's why. I think that's a huge,
it's relatable
point. Yeah, I get bored easily.
Yeah,
don't realize that I'm getting bored, and then that's when like, oh, the next best thing, like where I have my husband that's like, okay, let's come a little bit back down to earth. I'm not telling you no, but let's figure this out. Like, we can't just go from A to Z. And you know, because I do that with a lot of different things. You know, I had one of the crickets or cry cuts or whatever you call it, where I was making little things for kids and doing stuff like that. And it was kind of the next best thing for a hot minute until all these screen presses started happening and people, you know, figured out a better way to do it and all those different things. And so I want to say that's part of it. But also, I don't know, failure is just not really an option for me. Like, I can say I failed in LuLaRoe, but I kept going with something different. And I think for my kids, women, I have all three girls, they're going to be women someday. And like, I want them to know too, that like, if you truly believe in something that you want to do and you can make it happen, like you're going to have trials and tribulations and you're going to fall and you're going to, you know, you got to get back up and you have to pivot. I think the like super important thing, and no matter what you do, is like, if you can't pivot to whatever way it's going, most likely you're not going to keep going. And that's COVID, that's, you know, all the different things. And I think part of that is also the ADHD part, where it's like, okay, we're pivoting, like we're going to go do this. And, you know, and so I think that just having that for myself is what's been able to keep me going. Realizing that more in the last probably 2 years with my husband and some different things, my age and not having kids anymore and kind of my job and different things of like, sometimes I just can't stop my brain. Most of the time my brain doesn't stop, but I've lived with it my whole life. So But then sometimes now, being a little bit older, it doesn't stop and it's overwhelming. And so I think my husband and I have a pretty good system where, like, he can recognize it pretty quickly. Sometimes I still don't. But we just start having those conversations. This morning, we just had a conversation and I was like, do I need meds? Because I can't shut it off. But I've never done that. And I don't know how I would function that way. I don't know if I would be able to function. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. You know, just kind of talking through those things. And he's like, well, what's different? My job is very different right now. And it's very stressful. And, you know, it's pivoted since you and I met. And so your kids are about to start school and softball starting back up for Addie. And, you know, just all the things that we all deal with as parents, right, in different ways. But like he's pretty good with recognizing it. And I'm really thankful for that. And a lot of times I can too, but it's more, is it me? Is it you? Is it, you know? And so I think just...
No, that's a good point too. Well, because it lends to a question that I wanted to have. For me, there's like a point where I notice something has to give. And then I kind of like, it's almost like a pros and cons list. And it's like, what is it that's going to give?
Yeah.
So like, you know, when we had me and my wife were both working at the time, had a daughter. And I get it, just one kid, but between that and the two full-time jobs that were rather demanding at the time, for sure, you know, we entered a world where it's like we had these two dogs and we had to find something to do with the dogs. And this was, what's worse is this was like post-COVID where everyone was doing that with their pets.
Everybody got a dog.
Everybody got a dog and they were all trying to get rid of them. And here we are. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
Horses.
Yeah. So
we got a dog too, though. We did get a dog too. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting. But the question was going to be, do you think part of the ADHD, and I'm curious your opinion, and maybe you're different, but for me, it's almost like the harder it is, or the harder it becomes, the harder it is to get bored. And the more exciting it gets, the more it's like, okay, it's like, oh, hey, that's the most difficult thing ever. And heaven forbid somebody says you can't do it, right? So now it's like incredibly difficult and somebody told me I can't do it. Now it's not even... I don't know if there's like an internal, sometimes there is. But there's not always just like an internal click. Sometimes it's literally just... Okay, you said it was impossible and it does look really hard. So my mind has now instantly gone through every possible means to facilitate the thing.
Yep.
And it just happened almost autonomously.
Yep. Yep. I think that's a huge part of it too. I've had enough people in my life and enough mentors per se that can kind of steer me in that. Whether you say it's right or wrong track, I think always trying to be in the right track. And sometimes, like, you just have to lay it all out. You know what I mean? And then, like, for me, my, like, super overstimulated, all the things, I get to that point. I don't really watch a lot of TV. I'll have the TV going while I'm scrolling and working. but I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't, you know, I'm usually just doing a million things. And so like, I'll have a day where I'm just like, I'm done. Like I'll take a nap, watch TV. I shut down. I'm not doing the computer. I'm not really scrolling. Sometimes I'll talk on the phone, talk to my sister. My sister lives in Mississippi. But it's just like a day of like, I'm can't do anything. My brain cannot function. I want it to, but I just can't. And so that's kind of my reset. Sometimes it's more than a day. It's usually a pretty emotional day. and so that's kind of my reset with everything. I don't know if that's healthy or not. I actually have a psychology degree, by the way. So you would have thought I would have maybe known some of this after I got that degree, but, you know, all the things. So, but, yeah, I don't know if I really answered your question, but,
Well, there necessarily wasn't one, and thank you for taking me down. You know, there's this quote that they had in the Temple of Athens that's just kind of stuck with me the moment I heard it, and it was know thyself, right? And, you know, and then there's, I think, the Shakespearean sort of like to know better gain than to know thyself or something like that. I'm sure I butchered the quote. Sorry, everybody. But it's I think it's a full time, full life thing. To get to know and understand ourselves to the point to where, and I mean, even what I just described, and it's cool that you have your husband and people around you to help with, because again, that's the, I mean, it's a pro and it's a con, right? The pro is that the one thing they said we couldn't do, we're more than ever capable of achieving. The con is that it's so easy to go into every possibility to solve the thing, and so single-mindedly that we will end up halfway down the solution before somebody else is like, is this even worth solving? You're like, whoa, that's, nobody asked that question.
Not the answer. Yeah.
Nobody asked that one.
I will tell you that, like, I have three very good friends that are all from here, from Neola, part of my village that I've met over the years. One helps me here and works here, Alicia, and she's the one that's like, when I'm super busy during the holidays and things like that, like she's comes and she's like, I'm sure you haven't eaten today. Here's some spaghetti. Did you pee today? Here's some water. And so like, she has recognized that in me, and I like, love her to death, you know, would never take her for granted. Like, she has three kids. I have three kids. We both work full time. She helps down here when she can. So there's that. And then I have another friend who her husband graduated with my husband. We met at an ice cream shop at a rough time when we were having the kids, and just, she's not from here either. She was a transplant into Iowa. She's a VP at a very large company that's predominantly men, and very, very smart in every sales aspect and marketing aspect that you could ever imagine. And she is also that person like, hey, Jamie, I'm kind of thinking this is not for you. Or, hey, Jamie, like, here, let's weigh the pros and the cons. Like, not that I don't do that with my husband, but like on a marketing standpoint, on a business standpoint, on a, like, all those things. And so, like, I've
And there's different people you go to. You know, right. I've got a couple friends. I tell folks, everybody should have two of these friends. One of them, if I came to them and said, hey, you know, I just killed someone, they'd say, well, I've got a shovel. Where are we going? You know, and then the other one, if I said, hey, I just killed somebody, they'd say,
we got to go turn.
What did you do? Why did you do it? Like, what did they do? Like, are you sure you were in your right mind when you did it? Right. They'll like go through. It's like, and I need both. And so I kind of pick who I want to call. Like, if I really just need affirmation, I'm going to call the one that said, hey, I've got the shovel. Right.
Right.
If I need somebody to like, hey, I probably already know the answer, but I need some tough love right now, right? Yeah. I'm going to call the other one.
Yeah.
And you need both. And it's like, and my wife, she's got her own role too, right? She knows more than anybody else and more about me. So if it's, I'm not jiving with this person, you know, is that because I'm just never going to jive with that person, or is there something? And, you know, that's when inevitably the answer is typically something along the lines of, have you considered it's because they're a lot like you? I'm like, oh,
yeah,
fair enough. That makes a lot of sense. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah. Then I have one more that's like in a different stage of life. Like, she's 10 years older than me. Her kids are out of the house, you know, and she's also was a big VP at a company and like been the, she's like, we laugh now because she's like, you're me 10 years ago, like working every day, doing all the things, you know, all the different stuff. And so, I need advice with the stuff going on at school with my 13-year-old and, you know, and things like that. Like, I'm like, I don't know what to do. She's been through it all, you know. And we're a small school. So like when there's things going on, I'm like, I don't understand why they're doing this. Like, why are they doing this? Why is this a thing? And she's like, it's always been a thing, you know, like, and I'm like, okay, you know, I went to a large, very large school. You know, I went to Bellevue West and I don't even know, we had almost like 580 kids that I graduated with, like, you know, but it's like the whole entire Tri-Center where my kids go to school. So, yeah. So like I have those people in my life too, that are all very influential and I'm thankful for. I mean, I would definitely, you always find someone, right? But I would be sad if any of them were not in my life, you know, it'd be very difficult because I talk to them daily. And some of them have kids that are my kids' ages and some of them don't. So, yeah, but just having those people and being able to talk to those people. And, you know, sometimes I really have to back up though too and not talk. Like, something like, how are you? What's going on with you? You know, sometimes I have to recognize that too, because there's always something going on. You know, I could talk about anything all day long. So, yeah.
Yep. That's good.
So where were we at? We were LuLaRoe.
We're good. It was weighing the pros and cons, knowing to pivot, understanding yourself. So I think it's probably good. Is there something we haven't quite gotten to yet? Because I'm starting to feel like I'm feeling a good wrap-up moment, but I want to make sure we haven't missed anything.
Yeah, whatever.
Obviously, we could have.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about, like, my crazy home life with, you know, growing up and stuff, but we could do that another time. But I grew up in Bellevue, moved out here. My parents are divorced. It was a rough divorce. My sister moved away, I don't know how many years ago, 17 years ago, with her husband. So she's my only sister. So that's really hard. But we talk almost every day.
That's good.
Yep. She has four kids. She's busy. One of them lives in Omaha. She's graduated and living her best life in her 20s. And the other one's about to graduate this year. So I don't know if he'll come back here too or not. We need to get her back here. But yeah. Things. But I guess we didn't talk about AIM, what I'm doing now.
You want to talk about AIM? That's up to you.
Yeah, when we can.
What are you doing with AIM?
So when I started AIM, I was programming.
Which is how we met. I don't think we quite got into that either.
Yep. So when I started AIM, so I was a teacher. So after all the babies and the boutique and all the things, I started substitute teaching. So I worked medical previously for like 12 plus years. I started substitute teaching in Iowa. You had to have a bachelor's degree. And so I had the bachelor's degree. I took a class and I started subbing, which then turned into full-time teaching in Council Bluffs at Wilson Middle School. A pretty tough school. So I did that. And that was actually still during COVID. Kind of towards the end of some of COVID. So I started teaching full time. And then I got hired by AIM.
I'm seeing overlap. Teaching full time. When I guess there is obviously going to be overlap. So teaching full time on top of, you said mid COVID, where are we at here? That was the shirts, t-shirts?
Yeah, at that point we had the business moved into Underwood.
Okay. So all right.
My first like storefront retail building.
Wow. All right. Yeah. That's a couple things. Right. And you decided you needed another thing.
Right. So, I wanted to work. I wanted money.
Hey, I'm not judging. I completely understand. It comes back to the exact same personality we're describing, right? That's like, you know, it gets bored easy, solving the problem. The problem has to be big enough. It has to be significant. Sometimes the problem's too small. Let's get an additional problem
solve. Honestly, like, I say this a lot, and it's nothing against, I know at one point, I think it was kind of like a stab to my husband, but it was never meant to be. Like the 4-ish, 5 years that I stayed home were like the worst years of my life. And not in a sense, like my husband worked and made sure that he provided for us, but I had no like adult interaction, and COVID was in that. And like, and so, and I had moved out here, and like when we got married, we found out 3 days after we were married that we were pregnant, which was fine. We were trying before we got married, but like that was, you know, we just like sprung into all the things, and I moved out here a month before we got married. And so, and then Addie started school that next year, and like, you know, just all those different things. And so, yeah, it was just really tough. And so again, my husband at one point was finally like, I really resent that statement. And I'm like, I get it. Like, it had nothing to do with you. It was just what it was and my feeling. And so I used to do like drug screens and insurance screenings and stuff like that, where you could just pick and go, you know, and I had a little bit of money coming in from things from that. But then just the subbing thing kind of popped up, and it was good money. And so and then I felt like I was able to contribute a little bit more. Because basically at that time, the boutique stuff was paying my student loans. And so, like, I felt like I had to get these student loans paid, which I'm still paying them. But, I that was where I was at. I was just like, I don't want these loans to affect us later with anything and stuff like that. So, yeah, so subbing, teaching, and then AIM. And so I started on the programming side with AIM in the same schools that I was teaching in. So that was really nice. And then, late last year, the marketing team left and they didn't have anybody for marketing and events. And so I was asked to do that. And I did. And, I met you. You are our keynote speaker for a conference that we had postponed from COVID, hadn't done it in 5 years, and we relaunched it. And so it was fun meeting you at that point, but I was exhausted. I'm sure you could tell. I've gotten a little bit of sleep since then. And then this summer, they kind of pivoted me into development. And so we have a new marketing and events person. And now I'm on the development side for where I live in Southwest Iowa. So that's exciting, because we've been on this side of the river, but we just haven't been really known on this side of the river. So, still helping. Now we have another big conference coming up, at the end of next month. And, so still helping with some of that, and then, you know, doing the fundraising development side, of AIM. So, and then all the other things as of right this minute. School starts next week. In the state of Iowa, school cannot start until after state fair. So we just had the whole state fair thing, and then county fair was before that. And Addie plays ball, so we've traveled a bunch for ball. We went to Mankato, Minnesota. We went to Oklahoma City, went to Lincoln a bunch of times. And so now school starts, and ball started last week. And yeah, Joe might go back into rodeo if he's feeling a lot better too. Like, we thought it was a lot worse than what it was, so we were really glad for that. But yeah, okay. So all the things,
all the exciting things. How do you celebrate wins?
Sometimes I don't even realize that they're there. Most of the time, I don't even realize that they're there. A lot of times it's somebody kind of bringing me back by like, hey, you just did this, you know? For my kids and stuff, I'm like, you know, let's go get ice cream, or, you know, all the things with that stuff. Grades, you know, things like that. But I don't notice them a lot in myself. Probably something I should work on. It's usually somebody saying, one of those close friends or my husband saying, like, good job. You just did this. Like, you just pulled off the AIM event, or you just pulled off. I do a lot.
That's exactly what I was thinking about too. Was that, yeah, that event? Well, how did you win that one? Celebrate that one.
Yeah. I mean, there were teammate members and stuff that said, good job. But there's always more work to do, right? So, and I'm also not the person that has to be like constantly being patted on the back, because my brain just works so quickly that I'm already moving on to the next thing. But I mean, it is nice for someone to like come out and recognize like, hey, you did a really good job with that. Or, hey, you're doing all these things, because it's just my life. And so I don't think about it that way. I could talk about it. Like, yes, I know we do a lot of things. People look at me and they're like, oh my gosh, like, do you really do all these things? You know, how do you do all these things? And I'm like, I just keep going. You know, it's just part of who I am and what we do. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really celebrate wins. I try.
It's a solid idea, though. You don't realize it, but you already gave up an idea where it's like, because you mentioned how you celebrate with your kids. It's like, man, we should take those same friends, you know, that are close to us, and we should say, hey, how about I take you out to dinner for your wins and you take me out to dinner for my
wins? Yeah. And again,
I bet we would celebrate more wins too. We'd like call them up out of the blue and be like, I got a bed this morning. Right. Yeah.
And I do have like a little bit of that with my, you know, my friends. Things is like, hey, guess what happened? Like, or hey, I signed that. I got that contract signed. Like, I do that a little bit. But like some of the bigger things, I don't realize, I guess, so much until someone says something, you know. And I think it's just because, like I said, I'm just moving on to the next thing. Like, but that's where I think I've talked to my husband about, like, that's where I need to slow down a little bit and like reap what you sow in a good way, and like enjoy those little things. And especially now with our kids getting older, and they just grow so fast. I mean, Addie's 13. She can drive next year this time to school. With the farm, you know, license or whatever. And so, like, even just those things, like, Joe has also realized within the last year that, like, he worked a lot. And again, he took care of us.
Yeah.
But he missed a lot of things, too. And he always tried to, you know, he worked overnights when we first got married. He would drive to Kansas City and back every night starting at 8 p.m., and I was home, and so he was home, and he would spend time with the kids as much as he could, you know, and until they would both fall asleep and things like that. But he kind of realized he's at a good point where he is. He's a Teamster, and now he's like number three on the board of like 30 guys, which is insane. He's 42 years old. That usually doesn't happen until you're in your late 50s. But all those guys finally retired after COVID that were going to retire and then didn't. And so, like, him and I talking and doing in the things, he's realized, too, that he kind of missed some things, and they're getting older. We don't have a baby anymore. Like, our youngest is 7, you know, and very, very, very independent, very independent. And so, I think he's the one. I'm not the park mom. Like, he's the one that's like, let's go to the park, and throws all the bikes in, or the scooters, or the whatever, you know. When we go to family functions, again, he has a really big family. Everybody has like 3 or more kids. So like the kids flock to Uncle Joe, you know, like, and he's like, I brought water balloons, you know. We're like, I bring the fruit salad and the whatever, and then the glow necklaces and glow things, because they're running
the
around.
Glow sticks.
And I'm not even thinking, these are so fun. I'm thinking, we're camping and I want to see all these kids. I want to know where they are. So everybody's got to put them on. So this is a big difference there. But I think he's realized some of that too. So for both of us, we've had to really this last year just kind of take a step back as best we can. And we've talked more. We've been together 13 years, and we've probably learned more about each other in the last year than we have in the last 13 years that we've been together, which is kind of crazy. But all good things, and all, you know, just realizing different things, and that we're getting older and our kids are getting older and life is changing. Our parents are in different stages of life. Joe's parents are 10 years older than my parents, like almost exactly. And so like they're even in different, you know, kind of stages and working through some of those things and stuff. My dad lives in Bellevue, which is like 45 minutes from us. And my mom moved out here to Neola a few years ago. So my mom's here, you know, so which is nice when we're running around, like our heads are cut off and I'm like, I can't get home for the bus. Can you please just go? So that's really nice. But yeah, I know. We could talk forever.
That's good. That's good. Well, and it's, yeah, there's plenty there. There's plenty there. And it's good. It's good that you've got that relationship. Cause I get exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I just said it's like a full-time job, you know, the discovery of ourselves. Right. And then with marriage, I personally believe the best part of it is an unwritten commitment to then spend the rest of your life to try to get to know that other person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I get exactly what you mean because over the course of the last year, like even me and my wife, we've kind of been in this journey of like, I said this, what did I really mean when I said that? Like, where did that come from? And, and you said that, what did you really mean when you said that? Where did it come from? And it's a wild and interesting thing. And we're now at this fun point too, where it's like, even before we emotionally react, we're kind of in this place of like, this was my gut feeling, but I know it's not true. So where did that come from? Mm-hmm. And it's, so yeah, I get exactly what you mean. It's cool that the two of you have that, you know?
Yeah, it's at first it was kind of like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are we okay? Like, but now, like I said this morning, Joe's off today and I took off today. It's the kids' last day before school starts. And so he had to do some stuff for his CDL and it was his 19th anniversary of working for ABF. So it was his day off. So it was nice. But yeah, just kind of this morning, I didn't sleep very good last night. And he's like, you were sleeping. And I was like, no, I just didn't sleep very good. I was scrolling. That's what I was doing. And so we were just kind of talking about that. And I just, you know, there was the, are you okay? You know, kind of like just talk to me. And I'm like, I am. I'm trying to figure out, do I need meds? or am I just a little overwhelmed with all the things going on, you know? Which part of what I didn't say too is like our town celebration is next weekend for Labor Day. It's called Hoodoo Days. And my friend, my best friend, Alicia, is like the top person of doing all of those things. And I was asked to kind of do a portion, this a vendor event outside of my shop on Saturday of that whole thing. And so like then there's that too. I'm like planning a vendor event and it's our town celebration. And if it doesn't go right and people aren't there, then people are going to be like, what the heck? And then when do I open and who works at the shop? And it's also.
And
like,
our mind loves to pick 3 a.m.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Like, hey,
oh, yeah.
Good morning. Did you know the entire world could possibly hate you if this one thing doesn't go perfect? You know, yep. It's funny. I had literally just one of those recently. You know, it's kind of hard to even explain, but long story short, it was like friend thing. And I ended up having to call one friend, call the other friend. And it was like, and then it was hilarious is it was like, no, it was like, what are you doing? I'm like, okay, that's good to hear. Cause like my mind in the middle of the night was like, you're horrible and you've ruined things forever. And my eyes are just bloodshot. Like, yeah. And so, but I tell you what, for me though, I started to learn these tricks. Honestly, the last year, same sort of thing, right? You're talking about getting to know one another and get to understand ourselves. For me, I'm trying to play through tricks. So like a friend of mine once was like, I lean hardcore into focus mode. And I was like, what's that? It's like, it turns out iPhone has this mode. It'll like shut down all notifications. It's basically like, do not disturb. And I'm starting to, and it sounds difficult because it's like, on one hand, I really need to be engaged. My clients mean a lot to me and I want them to always be on and working. And on the other hand, I've had to find strategic times, specifically with the family and specifically right before bed, where it's like, this is going on focus mode. And then I've also found when I first wake up, as long as I don't see those notifications, go straight to like the Bible or whatever, and then like all I need is like a 10-minute on-ramp. That's literally it. And it sounds like nothing, but for people like you and me, sometimes it's a grinding 10 minutes. But once that's done, I can check the notifications and I'm fine. Yeah. But if I wake up and immediately go to notifications, and if one of them is like, we need this thing today or whatever, right? I'm done. And my mind is immediately into this like chaotic, like the thing has to be done 5 minutes ago and it's all going to blow up. And it's wild.
Yeah. And funny because so I sleep with my phone over my head, like behind the pillow over my head. Probably not safe, but whatever. About, I don't know, after Infotech maybe, so again, we have parents in different stages of life. Joe's parents live like 5 minutes from us. My mom's down the road and my dad's 45 minutes away. So I don't feel like I can shut my phone off. You know, my dad just has me here. My sister's 18 hours away. But I had to at least put my, and I don't have an iPhone. We're not even going to talk about that, but I don't have an iPhone. I do now put it on complete silent when I go to bed. Like I lay down, I might do a few minutes of scrolling. I shut it off on that side and that's it. And I try really hard to not touch it at night. The looking at the time, the different things, like I just roll over and try to go back to sleep. And most of the time I can do that. I am kind of to that point too now where like, you know, my brain doesn't really shut off, but when I lay down and I'm so depleted, like I don't have an issue most of the time falling asleep. If I do, I'm either sick or there is some real crap hitting the fan. Like when I hit that pillow, Joe will tell you it's 30 seconds and I'm out. Like when I can just, I need to be done, I can do that. But my morning routine, because I'm getting old, I wake up every morning with a freaking hot flash and it is the worst thing in the world. And even my husband is like, oh, I'm like, I know. I try not to, when that ends, then grab my phone because I'm ready to get up and go take a shower. And so like, that's my, at this point in my life, morning routine. And my husband's like, are you sure you should be having hot flashes? I'm like, I am. It is what it is. Like, I'm glad they're just in the morning when I wake up.
You know, our air conditioning died last night, right? So, you know, and that, you know, and here's the interesting thing. I think probably people in general, but especially those with like ADHD, right? It's like, you know, we create all these different things for ourselves that work great until they don't. And then what's worse is like life will throw you a curveball, right? You get that one emergency phone call that plays into the fantasy that you created for yourself. And then you're like, I didn't want this to happen. And the next thing you know, you have to pivot again. But anyway, I think it's time we move to wrap up. So I have two questions for you that we like to ask folks. So we have a routine over here, a motto, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
Like 1000% my dad. Yep. Just my biggest cheerleader, always there. The tough conversation. My dad does not sugarcoat and candy anything, and he never has, and he never will. And sometimes it's a little gruff and rough, but it's 9 times out of 10 what you need to hear. But yeah.
Good. The second question is, if there's been kind of a guiding principle or pithy saying that you found to be true for you again and again and again, what would that be?
On the business side, that community over competition. It's so important and plays into, should play into every role of your strategic plan. You're going to have people that do the same things, and you're going to have people that, you know, are a competition, but like a healthy competition is a great thing, you know, and it should be, you should want that. So, I think, yeah, like standing by that and, you know, I try to help anybody that I can. I've helped a lot of people with different businesses. I sit on a board that promotes small business and opening and all those different things. So yeah, I kind of live by that. Just competition is a great thing. Yeah. And community is too.
I agree with you. I think it's, I mean, it's a better means for business. And even if it becomes competitive, I think part of the I always hold the opinion that part of the reason Pepsi and Coke are as popular as they are is because there's another one. Mm-hmm. Like in your mind, when you go to that aisle, right, there's a decent possibility you were thinking Pepsi or Coke. You're not thinking Pepsi, Coke, Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper, Sprite. You know, it's and the fact that you've kind of entered that psychological, it just means there's a higher likelihood you're going to pick one of those two,
right?
Or you're hardcore bought into one, right? In which case you were never going to consider the other one. But then again, it plays back into the team spirit and they could playfully rip each other, as they should. I know, right? There's plenty of those commercials that we've had, and I really just think, you know, somebody watches that commercial and is a big fan of Pepsi, they go out and buy a Pepsi. Watches the other commercial, they go out and buy a Coke. You know, they're increasing sales,
right,
just as a result of some playful competition. So yeah. I agree with you. Community over competition. I like that. And I think it's a better way to do business, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I said, we're all chasing dreams, right? And we should all be in it together. And that's why the Boutique Hub was created. We're all doing the same thing or something similar, and we can bounce stuff off each other. And it's a great community that's all over the United States. And so I'm glad that I picked up on that however many 9 years ago, and I live by that, all, you know, in everything, like your village, your you know, everybody talks about your village. And I never really understood that as a kid. We had our family, my grandparents and things like that were the village, but it wasn't really a thing until I came out here. And you know, they talk about how much you have your village, and we have that village of people out here that's been built since I moved out here, and I'm thankful for every one of them. So
definitely. Thank you so much for being on today, Jamie. Yeah, I really enjoyed having you.
We were everywhere. Sorry.
you're good. No, that's exactly what we want it to be. Just all over the place, a blast in discovering things about ourselves and each other that we didn't know before.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jamie. You have a great day, okay?
Yeah, you too.
Bye, everybody.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.